Hey there, ho there. You're listening to Super Tool Shed, the only podcast on the internet that's definitely not us, it's you. I'm Bennett the Sage, I'm joined by Mark the Engineer, and wouldn't you know it, it's finally a new episode of Super Tool Shed. Join us as we blow the dust off our microphones and catch ourselves up, because there is not for lack of talking points since our absence. But first, the pleasantries. Mark, how have you been?
No, I'm good. Alright, so let's just get it out of the way. We're sorry that there hasn't been a Super Tool Shed in like 9 months. We've been busy. And you're about to know busy with what, very, very soon. But it's between it and Anime Abandoned and everything, it has just been like, it's been this constant false start. Like, hey, let's do Tool Shed. And I'm asleep. Hey, let's do Tool Shed. Ben's asleep. Hey, let's do Tool Shed. Bennett's going to the movies. Hey, let's do Tool Shed.
Oh, and it's not just me, of course. I mean, like, we have both been very, very busy with our own individual projects. Especially you, now that you have opened up your voice acting catalog, as it were, with the recent announcement that you're in Pokemon.
Oh, do we got to talk about that now?
Well, it's a new thing since we started time of absence. Oh, please, this is a conversation waiting to happen, but that's going to be further down the episode. But let's catch everyone up for our loyal Toolshed listeners. You have been fine, and for all sake of transparency, we are recording this on Christmas night, and right now I am feeling quite full of Christmas ham. I mean, I'm usually a ham, but right now I'm talking about literal honey-glazed ham.
What do I keep saying? Self-control is your problem, not mine.
Well, it's Christmas, all right? If there is only a handful of holidays where it is socially and culturally acceptable to stuff yourself to the gills, it's Thanksgiving, Christmas, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day, I think Easter too, maybe. If
wow,
you can
white people have a lot of gorging holidays, I'm finding. Jesus Christ, no. Like, I did Thanksgiving, yes, and then I had a conversation with my mom, and she's like, well, what do you want me to cook for Christmas? And I'm like, nothing, because I'm trying to lose weight. So I'm, like, I am good on my cabbage soup and my roasted chicken that I make for the cabbage soup, and sometimes with rice. But I abstained from a Christmas dinner this year in the service of, you know, just dropping all of my sitting around at this workstation pounds.
Yeah, it's ours is a very sedentary life, and we have to watch our waistlines. Me, certainly more than you, because I don't carry the weight nearly as well as you do.
No, I want to make this known right now, because there's just no footage of you full body. It's not that Bennett's really fat, it's just that Bennett's top heavy.
I'm like if you took a candy apple and stuck 4 toothpicks in it.
Yeah, like, it's just the unfortunateness that, like, all of his huskiness is all above the belt. Because below the belt, he's fine. So he's very Johnny Bravo, as we always put it.
Well, at least I have a torso that actually has the height to keep the kegness of my body type in certain check, as it were. But that's enough about my body type. Let's talk a little bit about what has been happening in this 9 month absence of ours.
Well, immediately today, sorry if I sound weird, I have a sinus infection today, and that's awesome.
I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to bring that up or not, but I was going to let that be on your impetus rather than mine. Today, I had to record, well, I didn't have to, but I felt like I needed to record something for the audience at large, because I am not able to make good on my promise of having one last episode before the year was out, and I felt so goddamn bad about it.
Having nothing to do with his computer being broken this year. Christmas at the White House is perfectly on, and Arizona trips are happening, and all sorts of shit. But no, we just ran out of time.
It wasn't helped by the fact that the beginning of November was just hellacious for the both of us. If we were busy all throughout the 9 months, the last week of October and the first week of November was easily the worst for the both of us. On top of obligations that we had to do, I also became sick. that was... That was easily...
Well, you came back sick from Yomacon, like so many people with poor immune systems. So, yeah, we went to Yomacon. We didn't announce it. We didn't really make a big deal out of it because we were there for the secret project. And again, you'll know very soon. But we premiered a version of it, which was, you know, 160 hours of me not sleeping and just shit hitting the cutting room floor and shit getting compromised and just like, this is not what I want, but we have to premiere it here. And funnily enough, there was a Tool Shed listener in the audience, and I always find it really funny how it's like, you guys just come out of the woodwork, like I don't know where you all are, but I feel your presence when I leave the house.
That's not crazy sounding at all, but it was a very pleasant surprise when we were up on the dais, and, we were fielding questions, and there he came. Not unlike Sasquatch emerging from the brush or to that, come to the microphone.
Or that clown that Patton Oswalt was talking about.
I had two choices. The creepy clown or Sasquatch. I went with what sounds like the less insulting option.
But now we've got both.
So pick your poison. But he came to the microphone and he just plainly asked in front of what had to be 200-300 people. Easy. He just played last. Is there going to be a new episode of Tool Shed? And I think we were both just completely blindsided by that.
As was the audience, because it was fucking crickets.
This was not an audience that regularly knows us. So that was to be expected. And certainly people who were just, you know, adamant about listening to Tool Shed on the site. So it was sort of like it was a niche within a niche within a niche within a niche. But it's always interesting to me to see how far the niche rabbit hole goes. And it made my day. And I think it made your day a little bit, too.
Well, it was deeply sweet that, you know, like, brave a Team Four-star audience and people screaming at fucking Lanny, do the Vegeta voice, to be like, hey, when's Tool Shed coming back? And I promised that guy, and which means that I promised you that the shed would reopen before the end of the year. And here we are. Just a few days before the end of the year, promise fulfilled, because it is 11:13 p.m. Eastern Superior Time right now, and when we are done, no wait, no skirting around it, it's going up for everybody.
That is correct, and because our listeners have just been chomping at the bits to hear our sultry voices talk about whatever floats within our purview.
Jack shit of nothing. And really, you know, like, all right, so let's close this. Car's still running. I'm doing good. Secret project's almost ready. All right, so why no Tool Shed? Because I want to drill into that just a little bit. Like, yeah, it has just been a matter of being busy with Anime Abandon and the thing that we are going to do once, you know, like the thing that we are going to be kind of mainlining with Anime Abandon. But, you know, the thing... Like, I've had a lot of time to think about this in terms of, like, what happened to Super Tool Shed that we just stopped doing it so frequently, and we went from frequently to infrequently to not at all. And the answer is, I haven't played a video game in earnest in, like, 3 years, and let's just have a sit-down, because we tried. The last actual episode of Tool Shed we recorded and never posted was this really depressing me going through the nature of being angry. And I look back on that and, you know, like, because immediately after editing that episode, I just went, nah, can't, that's like, and like, and it's gone now, it's long gone, it's digital dust. But the thing is that, like, we went over the idea that anger is a young man's game, just to kind of abridge what the whole of this episode of Tool Shed was. And the thing is that with me not playing video games for 3 whole years, like, the last thing I played in earnest, in absolute earnest, other than Street Fighter V, was Deadpool. And I was, like, and I just kind of realized, it's just, like, I'm losing it. Like, I'm still angry about plenty of shit. I am fucking main-veining fucking rage-a-hall. But, as I've said before, that my anger is something that does not fill from the top down, it fills from the bottom up, so it just kind of, like, pushes all the old shit out. And the thing is that, like, for all the stupid shit that happens in gaming, for all the crap that everyone's pulling, you know, like, there's an entirely new generation of people to scream from the rafters about a bunch of shit that, quite honestly, I don't care about anymore. Like, I am still a gamer. I still identify as a gamer, a person who loves games. But, you know, like, my gaming culture hasn't died. It has, in a way, evolved, but it evolved in a way where it's just like, well, that just feels like I'm being forced to do something that I love in a way that I'm not entirely cool with all the time. You know, like the idea that couch co-op has gone away slowly but surely, replaced with Xbox Live and the PSN and Steam and all that stuff, you know, like, the social aspect of gaming, like that hasn't gone away, it's just changed. But it's still changed in a way where it's like, all my friends, you know, like guys like Bennett and I are only going to thrive the most in an interpersonal social fashion with people who are like us, in the sense of like, hey, I work in new media, you work in new media too, so you make your own schedule. Like, the rest of my friends, they're all fucking 9 to 5, getting married, having babies. Like, I'm getting save the date shit in the mail now. And there is no truer statement I've ever tweeted than chasing your dreams just feels like everyone grows up faster than you.
That's sort of the darker side. That's sort of the darker side about the kind of career that both of us are in the middle of. And Mr. Regular of Regular Car Reviews actually kind of put it best when he recently had an essay where he talked about the virtues of making your own schedule. Kind of puts you at on a little level that allows you to look at other people driving to work and saying, you guys are going to work. But then after 3 months of that, 6 months of that, a year of that, you realize that what you're missing out on can often be human interaction. And it's a very isolating experience. And me and Mark are very lucky in that we both kind of bond with that idea that we just sit at our tables. We just keep our nose to the grindstone and just keep pumping out things that we are proud to put our names on. And that could be enough for us. But occasionally, speaking for myself here, I do kind of miss the ability to talk to people face to face.
Yeah, like, and see, the funny thing is that, like, I don't miss having coworkers. I don't miss a commute. I'm better wired for this than most people. Like the most that I'll do is go out for coffee with our friend Brian. And we just kind of sit in the parking lot and chill for a couple of hours and just kind of people watch it, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, because it's always, you know, like, there's always somebody going in and out of the Wawa at 1 in the morning. But, you know, like, this essay by Mr. Regular, which you can find on his YouTube page at Regular Car Reviews, gives you that lesser known aspect of YouTubing, except for, like, the deeply bulletproof and highly depressed, where, you know, like, there's that part of you as a new media personality that doesn't necessarily want to give up that part of yourself, because it's like, yeah, well, then I'm just going to seem like a bummer, and that's going to bum people out, and that's not really going to draw people to me. I have to be on all the time. But there are people who have been around long enough, you know, bulletproof enough, in certain ways that have enough confidence, you know, or maybe they just feel like they have no choice, to kind of say, like, eh, well, you know, there's no reason why it is that I can't show this deeply human side of me and admit, like, yeah, I'm lonely. Yeah, like, there's parts of this job that are depressing. You know, the same way with, you know, voice acting. Like more often than not, you're going to hear, you know, like voice acting is great. Voice acting is this and voice acting is that. And the strawberry fields for fucking ever. And you know, like, jobs fall out of the sky. But there are other people who've been around for a while who, you know, like in intimate panels or something like that, they might tell you about, you know, it's like, eh, you know, it's like voice acting is great when you get to do it. You know, like, and the rest is just you rocking back and forth in a corner in the fetal position by the phone, just going, why am I not good enough?
Continue. I'm sorry.
And, you know, like, it's hard to kind of figure out what the economy of offering the human piece of yourself is. Like, with Anime Abandon, you know, Bennett rarely takes the hat off, so that when we write, you know, Bennett with no hat on, you know it's serious.
or as near as makes no difference, no sense of exaggeration.
Yeah.
On the part of me for any sense of comedic, any kind of sense of comedy or whatever. I feel that your experience as a voice actor, as regards to isolationism, also is kind of compounded by the fact that your job is predicated upon having to prove your talent over and over again. And that can take a personal drain on someone's self-worth, I think.
Yeah, like there are people who, there are, you know, fledgling voice actors, you know, like I hate using the word amateur. People who are new media voice actors that are working their way up the ladder, either, you know, like up the hole of the new media ladder, or just trying to find that nice place to vault off into pro. But there are people who will, you know, tweet me every once in a while, and they'll be like, I feel like this because I audition, and I get nothing, and I feel terrible about it. And I've said, you know, not booking is not an indication of your self-worth. Not booking is just not booking. Like, you're not any less of a voice actor because you didn't book or continue to not book, because eventually you will book something, and that might be the only thing that you book for a while. You know, like, it, you know, like, I don't book as much as the other actors that you see on marquees at conventions all over the place. Like, I don't book as much as Habercorn. I don't book as much as Abear. But, you know, I book enough to continue to, you know, be happy with my career, and I'm made happy because of the fact that, you know, like, I'm other things other than a voice actor, which is why it is that generally, like, I don't talk about voice acting a lot. I don't really need to. Like, I'll talk about it on a panel at a convention if, you know, like, I am honored with an invite. But beyond that, you know, it's just like, you know, like, what am I supposed to do talking, like, to... What am I supposed to do, like, as a voice actor on Twitter and, like, just talk about voice acting? That shit's boring. So, you know, like, but there are people that, you know, like, and this is the thing, is that, like, when you centralize and specialize in that one thing, whether it's, you know, voice acting or new media personality, or, you know, like whatever that creative thing happens to be, where it's not as rigid as a 9-to-5 job, it's really easy to start to tie your busyness to your self-worth. And, you know, like, every down period, you're down. And that shit feels awful for a lot of people, which is why it is that I often encourage people, like, look, do not put all of your worth, all of your faith into this leaky fucking boat. You know, like, have a hobby. Have something else that you do. Have something else that you might be interested in doing and occupy your time with. Because, you know, like, I spend most of my time auditioning, almost none of my time actually working as an actor, and then for all of that time in between the auditioning and the working, I'm working on Anime Abandon. I'm working on our new project. I'm helping Scott with Dragon Ball Z Abridged. I'm doing other things that, you know, they can actually, you know, fill that general sense of, like, hey, I accomplished something, and that, you know, and that's a little bit of gas to get you a little bit further down the road. And, you know, lo and behold, you space out on that highway long enough, and then one day you kind of snap back to your senses and go, oh, hey, look, a new audition, and I booked it, you know. Like, or, you know, like, hey, look, I finally managed to get, you know, that one karaoke cover, you know, sung, edited, and posted to YouTube. Like, whatever it happens to be. Being something other than that central thing that you identify as can be important to make sure that you continue to get through it. Because, like, and the biggest problem is that, you know, like people don't generally want to tell you that there's a lot of suck involved in working as a creative in any fashion, because, you know, they don't want to seem, like, doomy and gloomy. But there, like, any job that has no correct ladder of advancement, no correct door of entry, and no real structure other than that of being 100% freelance all the time, is going to be a job that you need to be really, really solid in terms of how it is that you feel about yourself and your self-worth, because every second that you're not working, it's a second that you're thinking And every second that you're thinking might be a second that you're thinking, well, if I'm not working, I must be doing something wrong, even though you might not be doing anything wrong. And it that applies to voice acting, that applies to doing review shows and new media and YouTube, that applies to having a YouTube channel in general, that applies to being a webcomic artist or a professional illustrator that you know, makes your money primarily through commissions. You know, like, that's just how that shit applies.
It's a fallacy in life to think that there is more winning than losing in any walk of life. And when you realize that, you know, down the road, you're going to lose more than you win, you could kind of come to terms with what you can do to win more. You could take the fact that, you know, like, you didn't get that gig, or you didn't get this, or you didn't get that, and realize that the next day is going to come. It's not the end of anything. If you really, really are dedicated and really are determined to make your mark on voice acting or make your mark on anything, then you are going to do it just by sheer effort alone.
And what does this have to do with the lack of tool shit? Well, like I said, like, there's, like, me being angry is what started tool shit, unfortunately. But like, I'm getting older and there's still shit I'm angry about. But if there's anything like that I'm really getting tired of, like, or that I got tired of and realized that, like, it's just so freeing to not really give a shit anymore, it's just getting tired of, at, like, it's, I'm tired of getting angry at the machinations of things that really can't be changed and really, you know, shouldn't be changed. Like, we can't fully democratize gaming, because then that's democratization of creativity, and it's like, no, like, I don't want a game made by committee. I want, like fucking Call of Duty's made by committee. You know, like all, you know, those games that are just sequel upon sequel upon sequel. So
when you think about it, game design really is designed by committee, just committee by the people with money.
Yeah, so it's just like, what sells, what didn't? Let's just keep doing that over and over and over again. Xerox copy. And it's not to trash on Call of Duty, because, you know, like, if it didn't have an engine that was worth a damn, it wouldn't have gotten as far as it has. But, you know, and I also know that fucking Call of Duty people are actually very discerning, because they will trash a new game if it's got, like, one bad weapon in it. But, you know, like, it's somewhat freeing to just not really care anymore. And that doesn't mean that, you know, like, I'm not going to return to games. It's just the fact that I've been so busy. And really, I had said to myself, you know, like, if Deadpool was the last game I ever played, that's a pretty high note to go out on.
And yeah, on a purely, like, this is a game basis, I think both of us are holding out for Borderlands 3, though. I mean, if there's any game that could get you back into the swing of things, it's definitely that.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, like, and the problem is that, like, what is Toolshed? It was never really a gaming podcast. It's not a geek news podcast. It wasn't like it was never meant to be like the Big Blood Broadcast. It really just was meant to be Bennett and I just dicking around and talking about things that we found interesting and just kind of handing over our slice. And, you know, like, every once in a while, it's like, yeah, you know, like, if we speak our piece and somebody takes something away from it that's positive, awesome. But otherwise, you know, it's a very Seinfeldian show. Like, it just, Toolshed is not really meant to accomplish anything other than being a voice in your ear that's, you know, somewhat pleasant and kind of funny when we, you know, like, when we manage to hit that. So, I think that's the primary of the why, is just because, like, we kind of lost that sense of, like, oh my god, there's so many things that we're not talking about in general conversation, because we just had that overall Kevin Smith early on podcasting problem of, like, no, save it for fucking Smodcast. And that shit gets really, really boring after a while, because you want to talk to your friend, and you don't want to record absolutely every single conversation. And in the meantime, you know, Sage Versus kind of grew into a thing that Gabe really likes doing. So, you know, like, that's, I mean, it's not the same thing. It's a completely different kind of monster, but at the very least, it was something else for people to go to while we kind of sort out our shit. It's like, why do we do Tool Shed? Why should we continue to do Tool Shed? Should we continue to do Tool Shed? And the answer, of course, was always going to be yes, because we enjoy it, and we know that there are people who enjoy it. You know, like a nice long-form podcast that runs about an hour and a half to 2 hours long and isn't, you know, incredibly, like, polarizing or offensive, generally speaking. You know, like that's nice. That's drive time. So why not? But, you know, like, those questions still needed to be kind of answered in terms of, like, okay, so then what do I personally pull from in terms of, like, why do I, Mark Swint, do Tool Shed with Bennett?
And that's kind of the danger of doing a conversation-based podcast with your best friend, because all of a sudden you're having conversations just for the sake of the podcast, and that's not interesting. And if there's something that comes into our field of view, our first instinct shouldn't be like, I got to sit on this until we can record Tool Shed. Our first instinct should always be, hey, Mark, look at this dumb shit. Do you agree with me? Yes? No? Why? And that is conversation you have with your friends all the time. And that's how you become friends in the first place. And while that might be the appeal of the show in the long run, it's not the end-all to be-all reason to have the conversations. And also, it's come to my attention that, like you, I have gotten older. And I'm finding that my own interests, the things that I can speak passionately about, and the things that I can go on and on and on about and have an engaging discussion with, really isn't so much about pop culture anymore. And that doesn't really factor into a whole lot of, you know, a whole lot of viewer interest, I find. It's a lot of, like, well, you know, like, it's a lot of anecdotal stuff, and it's a lot of, like, you know, I did this dumb thing in fucking Premiere, and now I'm just angry with myself, and it's like, oh, shit, I lost 5 hours of work because Premiere crashed, and it did an autosave! If there's one lesson I can impart upon anyone who is wanting to work with the Adobe Creative Suite, never, ever trust your autosave. Save, save, save. All the time.
Oh, yeah. Just ask Scott.
Also, don't use Windows 10.
Yeah, there's that too. But yeah, like compartmentalizing yourself from your friend for the purposes of trying to craft entertainment, like, that shit just doesn't work in the long run, because eventually you're just kind of looking at your friend through glass until the glass pane lifts once a week and it's like, oh, did you see this? You know, like, and it's not like there's, you know, that there's nothing to talk about, or there's nothing that, you know, like, I want to talk about. Like, unfortunately, like, I didn't see Doctor Strange. I didn't see too many.
Neither did I.
I didn't see too many films over the summer. I just saw the trailer for Alien Covenant, and I'm just like, you know, like, because all the articles are like, you know, like, we re-inject fear into the alien universe, and I'm just looking at this like, you really think that you're going to be able to pull out of the fucking nosedive that is the Space Dicks movie? Let's see if Ridley still got it. And I'm watching it just going, nope.
Like, I mean, like, once bitten, twice shy at this point, of course.
Yeah, like that's it, man. Fucking Alien 3, Alien Resurrection, Prometheus, and now Alien Covenant. And I'm just like, nope, I'm done. Like, I'm going to go watch this. But after the Space Dicks movie, I was just like, ah, you know.
I think at this point it's becoming a game of, like, how bad can this really get?
I've got no feelings. Nothing gives me the fizz. Everyone's freaking out about Guardians 2, and I'm just like, eh. And, you know, like, Alien Covenant, eh. Fucking the new XXX movie, eh. Like, the new Fast and Furious movie was kind of almost fizzy.
Like, what about, wait a minute, what about John Wick 2?
I didn't see the trailer for John Wick 2 yet. Like, it came out today, I think. It was like a Christmas Day thing. Or no, it was last week. I just haven't watched it yet, because nobody made a big deal about it. That's the thing. It's like, I'm not seeking things out. So, like, and that's sad, because I'm the one that said, like, oh my god, John Wick 2 trailer tomorrow. And I forgot. that's how fucked my brain is from long hours and just staring at fucking polygons all day. But yeah, like, I, like, nothing's got me. No movie, no game, you know, like, I, you know, like, I'm entirely caught up on the entirety of the Arrowverse, and that's, you know, that's something consistent. Walking Dead is like, eh, And, you know, Steven Universe still has me going, like, why aren't there more episodes of this show? But, and in the meantime, I'm going to go back and I'm going to watch Gravity Falls, because both Bennett and Bill, right around the same time, said, like, have you fucking watched Gravity Falls? Holy shit. I did check out Rick and Morty, and I liked it, even though, you know, everyone kind of failed to mention that it had a plot. Because I thought it was just gross bullshit, but no, it's like there's a whole plot in Rick and Morty, and it's like, oh, fuck.
As you described it, it's like if more people just told me that there was this actual story with Rick and Morty and not just giving bad Rick impressions.
Yeah. Yeah, the Rick impression became the new Peter Griffin impression. Like, everybody at every con that I was going to, and everybody who ever recommended me Rick and Morty was, Morty, you know, and... You watch the pilot, and that's all it is. And, you know, like, Chris Zito, he had gotten me to watch the pilot at the very least at the time when it was still new and in season one. And I was like, eh, I don't know. But...
I've seen the pilot. It's very, very rough.
Yeah, but it was Bill that finally got me to watch Rick and Morty. And, you know, like, I found myself liking it. But he got me into Person of Interest, too, which wrapped itself up pretty nicely. So it's not like I'm not watching anything. It's just that it is so hard to get me to pull away from my usual battery rotation of shit that I play in the background while I'm working to get me to sit down and really pay attention to a show. Like, the first four episodes of DC's Legends of Tomorrow I found incredibly boring. And that is the 4-5 episode test, and that is an almost 100% failure. And I had to sit and force myself to watch it when it hit Netflix very recently. And finally went, all right, good. Just by the virtue of how many Back to the Future jokes they make in that show, and not a single Doctor Who joke, despite the existence of Arthur Darvill as fucking Rip Hunter. Which I personally consider that to be a lot of literary restraint. Where it's like, you have Rory right there! No Doctor Who jokes. You know what? Hats off to you.
I don't know. Like, I think at this point that any kind of referential joke to Doctor Who, regardless of the setup, feels kind of middlebrow.
It is, but, you know, like, even one joke, one, like, really obvious just fucking underhand lob of a joke would have been like, all right, and that's it. We've officially addressed the fact that Arthur Darvill is in this show. Next! But, you know, like, but they got through with some really well done Back to the Future jokes, and I was like, all right, yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, like, there will, you know, I really just chomp down hard on shit like that. Like, in the new Max Steel, when Max is on a fucking field trip and he's on a school bus, and Dredd figures out that Max McGrath is Max Steel, rips him out of the school bus, chucks him out of the fucking window over a bridge, and he fucking goes turbo, flies back up in the Superman pose, and he goes, you want to step outside, Dredd? And I was like, oh my god, I love you people!
Well, if I could take it back to Gravity Falls for a moment, what really attracted me to the show, what I didn't give it a chance, but Doug did a whole top 11 best episodes of it, and I usually check out his stuff because at the very least he remains a consistent plateau of quality entertainment. And he kind of convinced me to watch the show because what he showed me and what he described it as felt like a throwback to the science fiction shows that I used to watch as a kid, like The Secret World of Alex Mack, The Land of the Lost, 90s
fucking,
remake.
Fucking Animorphs.
Oh, yeah. Just like, it felt like, all right, it's just taking all those kinds of one ideas those shows had, and then just having it be like a plot of the day episodes. Okay, just a lot of weird crap is happening here in this town of Gravity Falls. All right, I'll watch it. And then as I'm watching it, I'm realizing, why am I hearing Strong Bad? And then I look through the credits, and there it was. There's Matt Chapman as screenplay writer and voice talent in the show. So, and I'm looking at the date of when this was made, and this was 2012, and I remember. So that's why Homestar Runner stopped updating for like 5 years. Matt Chapman was working on this show, and that was sort of like a huge boon for me because ask anyone who's not a Homestar Runner fan, and you won't find one. Everyone loves Homestar Runner. So if that isn't a bigger endorsement for the quality of the show, then I don't know what is, especially for something that's supposed to be lighthearted and fairly family friendly.
I don't think that it's that I am without fun and whimsy in my life. It is just the fact that everything is just ground down to the same fucking formulas. Like, you want to know how it is that I feel about Ghost in the Shell? Do you want to know, Tool Shed listener? Here's how I feel. I feel like mixing the original film with the individual 11 arc is fine. I think that the movie looks very pretty. I think that the guy playing Bato looks the fucking part. You know what I have? The only problem that I have is that they looked at the entirety of Ghost in the Shell, all of it, and they said, in a world of futuristic cars that don't exist and guys with cybernetic eyes and, you know, where, like the most cybernetization that people get are just, like, individual, like, little prosthetics, that the idea that a person has a complete prosthetic body is just too fucking much, so Kusanagi needs to be the only fucking one.
And we have to retcon that Bato isn't also a full cyborg either.
Yeah, like, everybody else just has prosthetic bits. And, like, so everybody in this movie is fucking Togusa. And, except for Kusanagi, because she's the special. And I'm just like, oh my god. Do you really think that I can't process? Like, okay, let's be fair. I am the person that birthed the Scott Pilgrim argument. I know this. Get everything you want, makes no money, Scott Pilgrim. I know that. But I think that when we go full Blade Runner, which they did, then I think that we can process the idea that there is multiple people with prosthetic bodies, and that what makes Kusanagi so special is that she's been in a prosthetic body since she was, like, 8. And that she's just, like, really, really, really good at driving a puppet around.
You brought up something that I really wanted to touch upon, but going to my feelings on the Ghost in the Shell trailer, besides the fact that, you know, as a plot point, just making her the special, it feels, one, like, if they're trying to ape from the first movie, which visually they are, because you could clearly see their homages to iconic scenes in the first movie, what they are neglecting to really bring from that first movie is the sense of the loss of identity. If she's the special, she knows who she is. You know, like, for plot mechanic-wise, she is the only one, or at least the very first one, that has gone full cyborg. She's just a brain case suspended and, you know, mechs and gears. Okay, whatever. You want to make her special, that's fine. But the same token, don't remind me of the first film and its wonderful use of providing a loss of identity for Motoko. Like, that the scene where she is in the boat and she's looking up and she sees somebody else using the exact same shell as her really hits home on how do you physically define who you are if somebody could just ride around in your body?
Yeah, if somebody could just buy your body off a fucking shelf.
Exactly. That really resonates with her decision to merge with the Puppet Master. That was, you know, like, that has thematic weight. And here it just feels like they got the visual trappings of Ghost in the Shell,
the tinsel,
but not really the ideas. And granted, we're only judging by what we see from a trailer, but I am just so not hopeful for this at all. I really am. Like, I've never been the one who said, like, oh, this is going to fucking suck, outside of things that are obviously going to suck.
Never mind the fact that the individual 11 arc itself sucked. You really can't follow up the Laughing Man with a cult.
Not really, but at least if you went with the individual 11 arc, you have a face, an actual face, to put an antagonist on, not just a symbol.
I'm sorry, but like so many years later, and in the span of this conversation, do I realize that like when you hold up the individual 11 against the Laughing Man was superior, because at the end it was just like all of this just seems like pure fucking anarchy, and you know, like, and it turns out like yeah, like anarchy was created through copycats who just wanted to commit crimes under the name of the Laughing Man, but then it turns out that the Laughing Man, spoilers, is just a kid who, you know, it's like, yeah, cyber brain sclerosis, there actually is a fucking cure for that, like, when your brain's hardening in the case, and you're like, oh, this was political. Awesome!
Yes! Like, it was a very, very good case of never play the audience for the short con when you can play them for the long con. And that right there was a better plotted arc, even though I really take issue with how the last episode ended with the Major apparently dying, but then like, nah, we just played you for fools. Like, oh, thanks for that one, guys. Thanks for that one. But I wanted to go back to Blade Runner for a moment, because there's only one thing I have taken away from the Blade Runner trailer, and that is this. Thank you for putting to rest the idea that Deckard is a replicant.
Yeah, see, I have not seen the original Blade Runner yet. I still need to choose which cut I'm going to watch, and I'm going to watch it before the new movie comes out. But here's the problem. And this is why it is that Ridley needs to be taken away from every typewriter, every keyboard in existence. Ridley said he was a replicant!
But he can't be a replicant if he is here 30 years later in the new canon of the Blade Runner crisis, the Blade Runner sequel, because the whole point of the replicants is that they don't live that long.
So motherfucker just forgot what he said. Like, oh yeah, no, Deckard's a replicant. That's the actual ending. Like, you want to know whether or not the spinning top falls on this? Yeah, it does. He's a replicant. And it's... Okay? I mean, like, it was better if we never knew, but, I mean, sure? And, you know, and then goes through Prometheus, and it's like, oh yeah, by the way, Alien and fucking Blade Runner exist within the same universe. Sure. Why not? And now it's, oh no, Deckard's not a replicant. What the fuck is going on?
They just can't decide on any kind of canon, because it used to be in the original theatrical cut that there was no hint whatsoever that Deckard was a replicant. It was just Deckard was human. And then the director's cut came out. Then the extended cut. And then it started to muddy the waters needlessly, because at the heart of the story of Blade Runner is the story of Harrison Ford's Deckard rediscovering the value of humanity through a source that is not human. If he was a replicant, then it just takes Roy Batty's speech at the end as it just completely trashes it. It's like, you will never understand what I've seen. Like, oh, I think he does, and he will immediately forget your value, because you're the lesson that you taught him, because he's going to die in about 6 years. If even then. But you know, if we taken the notion of him being a replicant out back, put two new holes in his head, and called it a day, saying, like, he's human, fuck you, he's human. The only way this story has any value and any thematic weight is if he is a human. Fuck him being a replicant, fuck him, you know, maybe being a replicant. He has to be human in order for the story to not only make sense, but also like I said, have thematic weight.
But we just drilled straight down into that. It's like, okay, that's it. It's official. Deckard's human. Except Ridley said he wasn't, because Ridley's fucking, he's going the way of Frank Miller, apparently. And that, like, with less, you know, lingerie, but still, he's drilling down the way of fucking Frank Miller, which is just an annoyance. You know, like, I personally feel like, you know, like, I understand. It's really hard to try and bat for new franchises, to try and, you know, like, take new ideas, you know, and make a new franchise out of them, because, you know, like, not everything's going to be fucking Hunger Games. It's going to be Divergent sometimes. But, you know, like, you still got to take those chances, because if you keep farming the 80s and 90s for shit, you know, like, shit's going to get lost in translation. It just is. You know, like, I guarantee you that there are still, you know, people trying to figure out, like, what, like, at fucking NBC Universal, Comcast, what are we going to do with Knight Rider? You know, because there was that whole Knight Rider Heroes thing that came out for a day. And, you know, like, because they know that they can't get Hasselhoff to do an entirely new fucking series, because Michael Knight can't be a young loner on a, you know, on a crusade to champion the cause of the innocent, the helpless, the powerless in a world of criminals who operate above the law, because, you know, he's too old to do that. So it's always, like, every story after Knight Rider 2000 is always, so Michael Knight passes on Wilton Knight's fucking legacy. And they have to be the new Knight. And, you know, like, it was with Team Knight Rider, and that fucking sucked. And Knight Rider 2008, which had merit, but just suffered from a lot of, you know, NBCism. And now, you know, like, Knight Rider Heroes, I think it was just, like, a fan film thing. But it's still just the basic formula that Michael Knight shows up, and under, you know, like, whatever fucking circumstances, some new kid becomes the new Michael Knight, and then the old Michael Knight is just Michael Long again, I guess. Because who's really going to be trying to kill him fucking 40 years later? And, you know, like, but I guarantee you someone's still, you know, batting around the idea of, like, what do we do about Knight Rider? Because, you know, like, we're stuck. Because part of the problem with Knight Rider is that, you know, like, NBC, Universal, Comcast is stuck with this contract that they've got with Ford. So whatever the new Knight car is, it has to be a Ford. Which was part of the problem with fucking Knight 2008. But, you know, like, you keep fucking farming this shit, and it's just not always gonna fucking work. Like, it worked with A-Team, but, you know, the Losers came out at the same time, and the A-Team hurt the Losers, but they were both kind of not the film that anybody wanted to see. Even though Jeffrey Dean Morgan was fucking amazing in the Losers, as was Chris Evans, as was Idris Elba, you know.
It's this spiraling pattern of, like, sequels that are way, way, way past when it was appropriate to make them, if they were appropriate at all. Hello, Basic Instinct 2. Hello, Christmas Story 2. Like, at a certain point, Kevin, you have to realize that you're Kevin Smith and you're drawing from the well again.
Yeah, which, at the very least, you know, Clerks has, you know, like, an appropriate trajectory. This was life in my 20s. This is life in my 30s, approaching 40s. This, in Clerks 3, the end of the Clerks trilogy, is this is life in my, like, over the hill. For a person that, you know, like, for a set of people that never achieved anything more than, you know, just over minimum wage, no benefits, working at these two stores. Like at least the Clerks trilogy has a proper trajectory. I'm not entirely on board with Mallrats 2. Like, I don't know why it is Mallrats 2 had to kind of, like, push Clerks 3 down the line. Like, kick that can a little bit further down, but whatever. You know, like, and I don't fault them fucking yoga hosers. It's like, you know, you're a fucking filmmaker, you want to make a fucking film with your kid.
Yeah, especially if, you know, like, as I've heard it, his investors are also kind of wary about there being a Mallrats 2. Last I heard, they're not making a movie anymore, they're making a series, but then again, that was the same thing with that his hockey movie that was supposed to turn into a series, which never fucking happened. Yeah, so
because the goon hit somebody. That's what it was that Sean William Scott, who was going to star in Hit Somebody, ended up doing the goon. And pretty much the goon was like, well, that's the movie I was going to make. Fuck.
Yeah.
And now the goon is getting a sequel. So.
Well, you know, you snooze, you lose, Kevin. Mm. But speaking of, I wanted to actually tie this earlier in the discussion since we brought up voice acting. But this is an interesting point of discussion, I think. We can have a little bit, much like when we discussed when you were announced as Nakali, you have also been recently announced as joining the major cast for Pokemon.
Yeah, how'd that happen?
Yeah, how the fuck indeed. So I only have a few questions that I think are really pertinent to the situation at hand. First, how does it feel to having to say such ridiculous Pokemon names on a constant basis?
It's new, I'll tell you that. I mean, here's my thing, and this will probably be like the definitive, in terms of my feelings on it. Like, I played Pokemon Blue. Like, I chose my side, and my side was Blue 20 years ago, and I played it, and I was awesome at it. And then I moved on to Brave Prince of Musashi, and then ultimately Final Fantasy, and never played Pokemon again. So I'm 20 years removed from all of this. Like, I've kept kind of an ear on it, but I've never been like a huge super fan, or even like a mega fan. Like everyone I know is into Pokemon, and like I feel, like I've always, just been like, eh. Like I moved on to other RPGs because, like Pokemon 20 years ago was not like Pokemon now, and anybody that's remotely, within our age group knows that. Like, Pokemon now is, like you can only catch certain ones at night, and they have like actual stats that you have to worry about, and like in all these really intricate RPG things that did not previously exist when you and I were playing in the schoolyard. And having to kind of catch myself up, which, thankfully, like I have people like Zito, who's been on the train since the first game and never got off. But also, like there's Serebii and things like that, where, like there's a quick and instant reference that I can familiarize myself with, so that way I don't sound like a friggin' douche nozzle. But then again, I'm also really well carried by Lisa Ortiz, who's directing. So, like if there's if like so far there hasn't been anything where I'm just like, but if there were, like she's like that's one of the reasons why it is that she's there, to make sure that everybody makes us sound as earnest as possible. So, like how do I feel about having to say, all the ridiculous names like Tapu Koko? Which that all by itself, like Tapu Koko is something that I blew in the booth like a bazillion bazillion times, because it is just not a name that rolls off the tongue. But I managed it, and like it how does it feel? Like I'll tell you something. Like it's something that on the back end of doing Nacali, and just on the back end of doing so many serious roles, it's definitely a 180. Where, like Kiawe is a he's a more serious character, but like we exist in a world where there's where people eat meat, but we don't know where it comes from.
Because you sent me a clip of the first episode you appeared in, and I heard, and it's always a surreal experience to hear my best friend in a major distributed show, let alone in like a video game or in another anime. But I'm hearing the lines out of his character's mouth, and I'm realizing that a lot of it is sounding vaguely similar to some of the lines in, I hate to say it, but it's vaguely similar to Garzy's Wing, especially when it comes to the Tapu Koko lines, because it's a made up word. It's a made up word that really doesn't have any meaning except for in the context of the show. So like the rocket rolls at Galba Juju makes no fucking sense, but it's supposed to make sense in the context of the show. But as an actor, you have to make it make sense, or at least have the appearance that at least the person who is saying it thinks it makes sense. And that's, I would imagine that's such a hard hill to climb sometimes.
Like you do your best to sell it, and when you don't understand it, you stop and you say, like, all right, I need to know what's going on. like we had that episode of Anime Abandon where it shows Crispin just like delivering a line, and then he's like, what does that mean? And it's not him going like, what does that mean? It's him like actually sitting there contemplating, like, but what does that mean? So that he can, like reattack it and make it sound good to him and good within the context of everyone else that's acting around him. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, like it's very Archer, like that's a made up word. They're all made up because, like the entirety of language is just a bunch of noises that we make up on the fly and then started documenting and saying that's set in stone now. So it's not really that big a deal. You know, like, I mean, like, the terminology in Pokemon isn't going to be any different from the terminology that you find in Street Fighter or Halo or, you know, like, any major franchise that has its own science or its own mythology where, you know, there is no name for X, so we come up with a name for X and then it becomes this. And then we all sell it like it's existed forever, you know, fucking Unobtainium.
You just hope to high heavens that it's not nearly as painfully obvious as Unobtainium.
Yeah. So, you know, like, it's just, you know, like, it's my job to sell it, you know, whether it's, you know, on the zero side of silly or on the 10 side of silly. Like, I will sell it to you like I've known about it forever, or I will sell it to you like it's the most important religious icon in my life. You know, like, that's the job, and it's fun, and, you know, like, we have fun because, you know, like, we're all sitting there going, like, this is hilarious, and then just like, all right, serious face, you know, like, you know, I don't know what Tapu Koko saw in you, but now that you're a Z-Ring owner, you need to realize your responsibility, you know, like, and that's it.
I know that in the context of the show, it makes perfect sense. And your earnest delivery is selling me that what you're speaking is very, very important. But at face value, nothing is as hilarious as when you are earnestly selling what on face value is very, very silly.
Yeah. But you know what? That's the job sometimes. Like, it's not all... You know what, man? Like, I'd rather do a million years of Pokemon than do another war game. Not for the screaming aspect either, but just because, you know, like, war games, they'll always bang down to the same shit. You know, like, grenade! Fucking and shit. But at least with Pokemon, it's just like, there's a Pokemon that is a set of jingling keys. You know, like, in one day I might encounter this Pokemon that has an island variant, because that's how Darwinism works in Pokemon. I mean, like, honestly, the whole island variant thing, I was like, wow, that's the most Darwinistic thing I think they've ever really pushed, is the idea that regionally speaking, that you know, the same Pokemon could have different traits because they're in a different region. Like, that's interesting. That's kind of sciencey. But there could be an island variant of the Jingly Keys Pokemon, and I will have to sell it like it is the most real thing ever, and I will do that. I will do that for the performance. I will do that for the fans. I will sell you that igloo in the middle of summer, I promise.
I think that would, like, when you're really weighing all the aspects of being an actor, meaning as it can be, just feels like the most frustrating and yet somehow the most fun thing to do, because it really is a challenge, because you're fighting against your own sense of humor, and it's like, it doesn't call for laughing, it calls for actual sincerity, so I got to stifle the laughter, this can't be ironic, so you gotta, like, act, but at the exact same time, you, and I imagine the other person on the other side of the booth, are just cackling up a nightmare, just having fun with the material written.
Oh yeah. Oh god, yeah. Like, that's anything. Like, I'm sure that you could, you know, comb any of the archives of Digimon recordings or Monster Rancher recordings or, you know, it's like anything, Duel Master, Yu-Gi-Oh, and just find days, years worth of actors and directors just laughing their balls off. Like, oh my god, like, this is serious. He's taking it so seriously because, you know, like that's the thing, is like, you get to laugh because it's not real, but then when the big red button gets hit, you have to stop laughing because to the character who you embody, it's real. And, you know, like, and sometimes even in that, you know, like, there, cuz, you know, like, you talk to Bill about, you know, like, the emotional depth of stories that have come around in Pokemon, where it's like, you know, because pretty much, like, at one point they retreaded that the story of Ash finding his Charmander, and they did it with Chimchar, so it's like Chimchar in the rain, and, you know, like, if he gets wet and his fire burns out, then he'll die. And, you know, like I remember that episode being fairly devastating as a kid, so to know that a whole new generation of kids are just going to be like, ah, you know, like, that's, like at least they haven't lost the touch, as it were.
I suppose you could argue that, but then, well, then again, Pokemon is kind of a legacy show. Like, there are the lifers who have been around since the beginning and have been sticking with the show long since past the due date. And then there are, you know, the new generation of Pokemon fans who they never heard of Brock or Misty. They only know May, if even that, or if even her. Like, maybe the island variants are the very first generation of Pokemon to them. So I'd imagine that if they're recycling stories from back in the very, very first season, we're talking like when I was 7 years old and watching Pokemon, that I guess I can forgive it. In that sense, because, you know, like, what's the kid going to do? Going to go back into the archives and watch the old stuff that they probably think looks bad and ugly?
Yeah, they'll never know. And, you know, it's fine because, you know, like, how many times do stories get recycled through other forms of media? How many times, like, you know, like, I, like, an episode of Arrow where I'm just like, this is the Batman Animated Series episode Over the Line. You know, like I remember this episode very clearly in Batman the Animated Series. You know, like, it's, you know, like it is what it is. But, you know, like, that shit just happens. And, you know, it doesn't lose any of its punch. Like, it's less impactful for an adult who saw it as a kid, or it might be less impactful for an adult who saw it as a kid, because they're going to do what I just said. It's like, I remember this episode. It had a fucking Charmander in it. But, you know, for a kid the first time, just completely fresh, like, that shit might be equally as devastating to them as it was to me when I was a kid watching that episode. So, you know, like, that, like, it's, like, the formula can be but so many things, but that does not make it any less effective when you consider the fact that the demographic, you know, like, I once told, A-Bear that, you know, like, you never really need to worry about Dragon Ball and whether or not there's going to be work, because every day some kid turns 12, and that's kind of the gas in Dragon Ball's engine, the same as the gas at Pokemon's engine, is that, like, every day some kid gets a DS or a Game Boy, every day some kid turns 6, and that's our brand new fucking demo right there, just fresh off the farm.
I kind of look forward to the day when my nephew Declan is old enough to have his little DS and he's playing his Pokemon and he's bugging his dad about catching a Pikachu. And then my brother can look at him and says, "Son, I've been catching Pokemon since you weren't even a twinkle in my eye," and just blow his mind.
Yeah, because, you know, like, every kid has that sense of, like, well, the history of the world only began with my realizing there was a world to have history in. It's like, no, once upon a time, we used to have phones that were bolted to the wall.
Once upon a time, we didn't have these magical rectangles that show us whatever video we wanted. We had to get our own thick rectangles that only had one movie on them, and we liked it, because it always remembered where we left off. Always.
No buffering, just tracking. Just infinite fucking tracking.
Just don't stick it near a magnet.
Oh god. All right, were there any other questions related to this to the next 3 years of my life?
No, I think that's just, I think the series of questions was really just sort of a kind of a ramp to talking Pokemon for a little bit.
Can I just say something though?
Yeah, sure.
This is... Kiawe is always going to be special to me for a very important reason. He is my first honest-to-God, dyed-in-the-wool anime protagonist. Because I have never, not once, in my career, spoken the words, "Let's go."
There it is. You're the proactive protagonist. You put the pro in proactive.
Oh, yeah. I was in the booth, and I'm reading everything, And it's like, you know, Pokemon battle and whatever, and, you know, don't hurt yourself. And, you know, just talking about Turtlenator. And, you know, I'm figuring like, all right, well, you know, it's like Team Skull is new, like kind of, you know, new, more effective Team Rocket. And like, all right, that's it. And then all of a sudden it's, okay, Turtlenator, let's go. And I'm just like, is it my birthday?
I think there's a little spring in my step.
And, you know, and Lisa's like, what? Like, I've been waiting my entire career to say these words. Not these words specifically, not like Turtlenator, but, you know, like subject, whatever. But let's go. That is the key phrase of anime protagonists. I have never gotten to speak these words. I finally got to speak these words. But then it became all of my birthdays that I haven't celebrated all rolled into one, because then I got to go full Domonkashu. And I could not wipe the smile off my face. I was just ecstatic, because I've been waiting. I never thought, because, like, you know, like, I am trying really hard as an actor to have a diversity of roles, and trying to juke, you know, just being the black guy in voiceover. You know, like I can't produce that urban sound, and, you know, like, it's not a part of me, and I'm not a good enough actor to be urban for a production. So, you know, like, there have been plenty of black and brown people that were of urban leaning that I've just been like, no, I'm not your guy, sorry. Like, there are plenty of other actors, white actors, that can do it better than me. And but more neutral brown characters like Kiawe, like Nikali, like, they're fine to me. So, but the thing is that those characters don't really get put front and center in anime or video games too much, and they sure as shit don't get a fucking Domonkashu speech. So Kiawe remains this extra special unicorn of a character to me, because, you know, like, he's front and center, and, like, he's an expository character. Like, he represents, you know, like showing Ash the ropes of, you know, like, how things work on, like on this island, and how, like, and how they go about, you know, their daily lives and things. But also the fact that they, like, they don't just make him this Brock character, this new Brock, but they also give him this huge ass, like, Z moves are really important. They're important to the game, so it's important that we show one in full, like, in fully realized animation. And bang, you know, like, they give it to Kiawe, who, you know, he's kind of like he's a little James Dean. So I just couldn't wipe the smile off my face. I was so happy. I was like, oh my god, this is all the birthdays I haven't celebrated. It's rolled into one, you know. And it's like, I don't know if I'll ever get to do that speech ever again. But the fact that I did it, it's like, that's it. I proved that I can do it, you know. Like, and it was fun. It was so fun. Because, you know, there are people that'll listen to me and they'll just like, we know what Mark's good for. He's good for this voice. And he's good for this voice. And, you know, like, he's good for Nikali and stuff. But, you know, like, no one's ever asked me before, like, hey, Mark, how young can you read? And I said, well, thank you for actually bothering to ask me that. Like, I think my ceiling's about 14 or 15 if I really try. And I got to audition for that. And in someone believing in someone not deciding, you know, the beginning and end of what I'm good for just instantly, in someone being open to that very idea, which, you know, like, I'll never be able to properly thank the people involved for showing me that kind of gray area. You know, like, I got to do the one thing that I've never gotten to do in all the years that I've done voiceover, and that is fucking awesome. And I would hope that, you know, like, anybody who you know, gets kind of pigeonholed and typecast into, you know, like, oh, well, they're only good for this voice, that, you know, like, somebody believes in them too, because if there is anything, and this is the most important thing that I'll probably ever tell you guys, if you're interested in voiceover, you can be prepared all day. You can, you know, you can believe that luck is preparedness meets opportunity. But at the end of the day, you know, like, you want to know what it is? The most important component is in how do I get into voice acting? Somebody believing that you can do it. That's, and it, like, you know, like somebody who's already in, someone who's already, you know, like in working, you know, like in a position to help you out. Like there is no greater lubricant to those gears than someone believing that you can do it. You know, like it's like, because unfortunately there is no, like I said at the top of this, there's no real proper way in. You know, like everyone's story is going to be different, but there's going to be that period, there's going to be that one moment in time where, you know, that intersection of preparedness and opportunity is going to hit, and really what gets you through that intersection is somebody, or well, what really gets you to that intersection is somebody believing that you can do it in the first place and that you're not just full of shit. So, and then the continued thing is that people continuing to believe in what it is that you're capable of beyond what they've already seen. So if you're getting into voiceover, if you're considering voiceover, if you're a new media voice actor, or you identify as an anime voice actor, if you sling voices at a microphone to the purpose of working in anime, video games, radio spots, cartoons, whatever, the one thing that you should always hope for is that you at least once are prepared enough to show your stuff, and that is impressive enough that somebody believes enough in you to fucking go to bat for you. Because that is that first opportunity, that is what it's made of, and that is the thing that is going to decide whether or not you keep doing this.
That is such an inspiring, such really, really is an inspiring bit of advice there. And it almost kind of feels like, especially on my end, like, how the fuck do you even add to that? Oh, god damn it. You really put me in a bind, Mark. Thank you very fucking much.
Well, I mean, it, like, but doesn't it really apply overall to working creatively? Like, I mean, beyond being a YouTuber, which, you know, like, we already know that the prosumer camera is slowly dying because, you know, the Galaxy S7 and just the mobile phone market just making it so that, like, anybody can go onto YouTube. I mean, like, success is just something that, like, no one can predict by any margin. I mean, there are certain things that you can do to kind of try and create the ingredients of success, but really, you know, like, you could do your best with all the ingredients and all the prep time and all the and the most definitive recipe in the world to bake a cake, but for some reason it fucking comes out an hour later flat, and you're like, well, shit. You know, like, what did I do wrong? And the answer is, it could be nothing. There's just no fucking telling.
But, you know, like, executives have broken their backs trying to figure out if there's a formula to success, and there really isn't.
But, so, you know, like, it's, like, beyond new media, which is just, you know, fucking just running into the wall repeatedly at 100 miles an hour and hoping that somebody hears you on the other side, everything else, like voiceover or writing or, you know, like adaptation work, like working as an illustrator, like, somebody just has to believe that you can fucking do it. You know, like they have to believe that you can do it long enough for you to show them what it is that you can do. You know, there's a lot of, you know, like over time, you know, you might even hear stuff like, well, if you take this class, or, you know, like, if you jump through this hoop or jump through that hoop. And the thing is that I've been relating that to the very idea because I've heard that out of a couple of people, like, ah, well, you know, like, so-and-so would be better if they took X class. And I'm just like, what are you basing that on? And the thing is that, I think I've been relating this to the idea that the only way for us to measure potential energy is for us to see its kinesis, right?
Yeah.
Like, we can't put a ball on top of an angled plane and measure its potential necessarily. until we actually roll the ball, and then we can, in a reverse fashion, calculate how much potential it had. But we have to let the ball go first. And, you know, like, that might not be entirely scientifically sound. Like, there might be a way I'm not aware of to actually measure the potential of an object pre-kinesis. But, you know, at the very least in my mind, it makes enough sense to apply that, you know, like, I have no idea how much energy this ball on top of this angled plane had until I just let it the fuck go. Or, you know, like the rubber band coffee can experiment. So, you know, like, it's a matter of, you know, like constantly telling people what they're worth, or having someone tell you what it is that you're worth is not actually an indication of what it is that you're worth, because if they've never seen what it is that you're capable of, they don't know what you're fucking worth. Which is another thing that flies into this whole self-worth conversation. You know, only you actually know what it is that you're worth. And if no one is interested in seeing what that is, then they sure as shit can't tell you what it is. And you need to remember that. Like, that's really important. Like, in those cold, dark fucking moments when it's just you and your fucking inner demons going like, ah, fucking, I'm fucking dog shit. Like, you know what it is that you're worth, you know? And it's not that hard to find out, to audit that fucking ledger of what it is you're worth. Like, no, but I know that I can do this and this and this and this. And maybe I'm not applying all of those skills immediately right the fuck now. Maybe, you know, like, I specialized in college to do this, but I'm fucking working a counter at Denny's, or I'm fucking, you know, like, stocking shelves at Walmart. But that doesn't change the absolute truth as to what you're worth. It's just that no one's given you the opportunity to actually roll down the plane yet. But that doesn't mean that you don't have that energy stored in you.
You just gotta wind yourself up and let yourself go.
Yeah.
Eventually, you'll find the people that recognize what you can do and will support you in your attempts to do it again and again and again. And luckily, and I think that's basically how we found each other in a certain way, in a roundabout way.
Yeah. You know, like, I'm sure that there were plenty of people that said at one point, like, how long can Anime Abandon last? It's just more of the same, you know, Channel Awesome formula, rip on bad anime. But it evolved over time, and people who stuck around got to watch that growth, where it's, you know, like, well, like, let's rip on Garzy's Wing, let's rip on fucking Mad Bull 34, and then Grave of the Fireflies, and then Jinro, and then Video Girl Eye. You know, like, that, like, you just had to sit and watch and wait for Bennett, you know, like, Bennett more so than me, because I wasn't nowhere around for Jinro, and I was nowhere around for Grave of the Fireflies. You know, you just had to sit and wait for that potential to actualize. But it happened. And then you go, this might be worth continuing to watch. This might be worth, you know, keeping an eye on, because who knows where else it'll go.
It's the idea that you have to give yourself the ability to not only create but evolve. Because as much as we like to believe that what we can immediately make is just of immediate quality, that doesn't mean it can't get better. That doesn't mean, like, there shouldn't be that want and need to improve. And I was very, very conscious of trying to improve the show wherever I can. And I still try to do it today. And, like trying to do a Photoshop gag and doing that on my own instead of having to ask Mark to give me a quick little edit, or if Gabe could give me a quick little edit. I decided that, no, I'm going to try to do this by myself, and I would actually kind of surprise myself by being able to pull it off. And I was actually proud of myself for a little bit, but then, you know, had that little moment of warmth, then nose right back down to the grindstone. You got to not only give yourself that room to evolve and grow, but also realize when you did it, and, you know, giving yourself a little pat on the back for saying, like, yeah, you did do it. Let's see if you can do it again, man.
Yeah, you just keep fucking punching the bar upwards. And, you know, like, some people can do it in an infinite fashion. Sometimes it only happens every once in a while, but, you know, yeah, you can do it. So
as long as you keep swinging.
So, you know, these are the bits of wisdom that I impart to you in a career spent trying to make it work as a person who pretends and makes stuff for a living.
Yeah, I mean, it's all well and good to have theory, but practice, that's where it gets hairy.
Yeah.
So, Mark, I think it's time for you to do what you do best. Bring us on home.
Intro and outro music by Nick Vaughn. You can follow him using the Twitter link below. You can take Super Toolshed wherever you go. Just go to bendthesage.com/supertoolshed. For Ben the Sage, I'm Mark the Engineer. Until next we beat, the shed is shut, and happy Shedmas, everyone.